Welcome to the Interesting Football Podcast. My name's Laurie Knox, and I'm joined by former GCSE technology dropout Simon Day as we decide whether Tottenham Hotspur are the most interesting team in the English Premier League. Simon Day, how are you, and what do you first think of when you hear the name Tottenham Hotspur?
I'm a little bit disappointed that you've referred to me as a former GCSE technology dropout, because
why?
It's true. Well, it's true, but so were you.
I was indeed.
We sort of dropped out halfway through, didn't we? Because we did, and I didn't realise this was an option until we actually signed up for it. We did statistics instead, didn't we?
Yeah, GCSEs. And you know, I only found out recently after teaching in the UK that I'd done statistics. For the last 20 years of my life, I've lied on my CV, because I knew my eight of my GCSEs, and I always had that one at the end where I didn't remember what it was, and I just put it down as IT. But then when you start teaching in the UK, they actually want to see your certificate. So I somehow managed to fish out my GCSE certificates. And it turns out it was actually statistics, that odd one out, not IT, but there we go.
I didn't realise we got certificates, to be honest. We got certificates.
We did, indeed.
I do recall a few years ago sifting through a load of crap from school. And do you remember, there probably was a certificate involved here somewhere. Do you remember your record of achievement? It was put together as if it was like, this is the key to your future. This is like, if this isn't perfect, you might as well just go and sleep on a park bench for the rest of your life. It was like, you know what I mean? It was like, that was everything about, you know, gets you like personal statements and have a statement about every subject, didn't you? And you're like laminated in this beautiful leather-bound folder.
Now that rings a bell. But Mr. Day, can we get your personal statement
from
Hotspur, please?
Sorry. That really was going off on a tangent, wasn't it? Spurs, my first thought when I think about Spurs is I just love the fact that they were one of the teams that were invited to the European Super League, even though,
oh yeah,
lads, it's Tottenham. It's like some of the great names in European football who have won like league titles in my lifetime and European trophies, and then Spurs get an invite to it. It's like, come on. It's teams like Birmingham City and Swansea and Portsmouth that have won major trophies more recently than Tottenham.
And like, Nottingham Forest have done better in Europe, so, you know.
Well, massively. So, yeah, I found that quite amusing, to be honest. I find Spurs quite amusing, I think.
One thing I'll say, I always respect Tottenham for their fans. You know, even though they're, I'm not going to say a joke team. They've always just, you know, they've always been just on the edge of being a good team, and something always goes wrong in comedy fashion. So
it's Spursy.
But you know, Tottenham, they've always had good crowds. You know what I mean? Like, you look at some clubs. I was looking a couple of weeks ago. I looked at the average attendances for the first ever season of the Premier League, 92-93, Chelsea 17,000. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff, which, you know, I don't respect when a club suddenly gets like 25,000 new fans every home game.
Chelsea might be down to about that for the next home game.
This is true. But and on the subject of that, Chelsea, Russia, etc., yes. I love the fact that Russia applied to host the Euros today. Absolutely phenomenal.
I was going to bring that up because I think that's brilliant. Are you changing whose side you're on in the war now? Russia are clearly better at banter, aren't they? You've got to respect them for that.
I was thinking about doing a TikTok video and, like, you know, the definition of pessimism is, and doing that, and then just optimism, and then just having that as the background, basically, Russia bid for the Euros. I mean,
but the counter move now is for Ukraine to put a bid in.
Oh, yes. And everybody else pulls out and just sees.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's got to be the war cabinet or whatever they're called in Ukraine. They need to get round, and that's got to be their next move.
Yes, yeah. But no, because the other one is England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, right? We just had an all European one, so let's just have another one with five. I'm not for me, I know, a traditionalist. I just like to see one country host it.
100%. And I think the problem in this country, and it was massively established at Euro 96, and I think it was to an extent last year, is, and this is completely not me, but when England aren't playing, there isn't the level of interest.
No.
So there was like, in the second round, there was like Italy versus Austria at Wembley. Not a very big crowd at all.
No.
It's just not the interest. And Euro 96 was like half empty stadiums, wasn't it, when England weren't playing?
Yeah, no, really badly. I think Hillsborough was the well didn't do as badly as the others in that I think it was like 60-70% full for the group games. But the yeah, I remember there's that one, was it 4 o'clock on a Thursday or something like that? Bulgaria, Romania. So, yeah. Well, people there were saying it might have been 5,000 or 6,000 in the stadium because they counted tickets sent off to the national organizations, but people looked around and said, yeah, you know what, like St. James's Park was like 80-90% empty. It was just
And what did the semi-final between France and the Czech Republic didn't sell out?
Yeah,
like, that's crazy. Mad, isn't it? How can you not sell out the semi-final of the Euros? So I don't think we should host it.
Fair enough.
Rubbish. Anyway, carry on.
Let's have fact number one, shall we, for Tottenham?
Yeah, I've swapped the facts around because this was going to be the third fact, but because you just mentioned Spurs falling at the final hurdle in terms of achieving anything, I thought I'd better bring this one up first, which was in 2006, Spurs missed out on qualification for the Champions League after 10 players got food poisoning the night before their must-win final game of the season at West Ham.
That's right. Yeah, like what a classic Spursy moment, right?
That's brilliant. Yeah, they had to beat West. They lost 2-1. They had to beat West Ham, but yeah, 10 players were out. It's referred to sort of in Spurs folklore, so to speak, as Lasagna Gate.
Lasagna Gate. There's always a gate in there, isn't there?
There's got to be a gate. Well, there's Pizza Gate, wasn't there? That was the brawl. Someone threw a pizza in the tunnel at a Man U Arsenal game.
Oh, one. Yes.
A Pizza Gate, wasn't there? But I can't find any evidence that Lasagna was to blame anywhere. Like, apparently, Environmental Health found no trace of food poisoning.
Hmm.
There's subsequently even a couple of sort of Spurs, someone called Johnny Jackson, who was like a Spurs, I think a Spurs reserve player or squad member at the time, said the whole thing was massively exaggerated. And basically one or two players, I can't remember who it was actually, Michael Carrick, I think, did have really bad food poisoning, but that was it.
Right.
But at the time, Martin Jol, the Spurs manager, wanted to have the game delayed by 24 hours. Initially, and then when they lost, he wanted to have the game replayed.
Wow.
Are you like, get a grip, Mark? Come on, Martin.
Yeah.
Come on, Martin. But,
well, if it really was like 10 people just come down with a mysterious illness, again, going back to the Russia thing, you know, like no traces of any foul play, that's classic Russian territory, that is. I mean...
But I just think the FA would have gone, well, lads, it's Tottenham. It's like, it's the last game of the season. You've got to win. You're going to lose anyway, so...
In some comedy fashion with Arsenal pipping you by like half a goal to a third place or whatever it is.
Exactly. You miss out this way, you can keep your dignity. It was out of your hands. It was food poisoning, apparently. But yeah, but there's no reference anywhere I can find about Lasagna.
Damn.
But it's known as Lasagna Gate.
On the subject of being Spursy, St. Tottenham's Day was an absolute beauty. For those of you who don't know, Arsenal fan, I mean, how long did Arsenal go finishing above Tottenham? Was it 15, 20 years? It was
about that.
It was a lot.
It's a Premier League era, probably, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a long old time where Arsenal just constantly finished above Tottenham. And Arsenal fans would celebrate the day when it became mathematically impossible for Tottenham to overtake Arsenal would be called St. Tottenham's Day. And it, you know, seems to be getting earlier and earlier each season. But then it just got really funny because for about 3 or 4 years until it finally happened, Tottenham would be like 15 points clear of Arsenal with like 7 matches to go and still somehow mess it up in comedy fashion, Spursy fashion.
My favourite one of that was the year Leicester won the league.
Yes. When
it was like a tight... Tottenham were like behind them, weren't they? Coming up on the rear, they were going to give him a title challenge. And it was like a two-horse race. And Leicester ended up winning the league by like 12 points. And Arsenal pipped Tottenham to second place on the last. Having come from nowhere, they pipped them on the last day of the season.
Brilliant, brilliant. Right, well, Mr. Day, good fact. Let's get over to the quiz now. We were lucky enough to grow up in the era, possibly, you know, shout there, the era for the best FA Cup finals, which I think why lots of people around our age still kind of like have that romantic notion of the FA Cup, what a special tournament it was. You know, look back at some of the classic finals, you know, the two at Merseyside derbies. You had Wimbledon, you know, who were a non-league team, an amateur team 13 years before, 15 years before, beating the best team in the world at the time, probably Liverpool. Coventry Tottenham as well, 3-2, classic.
Classic, and yeah. I think now we've got this year, we've probably got like Man City nil, Chelsea nil, Man City win on penalties, something like that, isn't it? Yeah.
Man City kind of semi-reserve slash Man City A. Yeah. Versus Chelsea A, not quite a reserve, but
Well, it's funny because I was watching the only FA Cup quarterfinal I watched was Crystal Palace Everton, and it was quite nice because I feel like Crystal Palace are the sort of team where it'd be quite nice if they won the FA Cup.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Should win the FA Cup, but blatantly they were just beating Everton to sort of win the right to go out limply to a shadow Man City or Chelsea team in the semi final. You know what I mean?
At like, Wembley as well. Don't get me started on that.
Wembley,
And sorry, actually, there was another classic, Man U 3, Palace 3. There was another classic. But I was going to say, the last one, because the FA Cup, I think, 92, it started going a bit rubbish when that's when Liverpool beat Sunderland 2-0. The last one from that kind of golden era, I think, and probably more to do with a certain injury, was a Tottenham 2, Forest 1 in 1991. And that is, it's a very long introduction to the quiz. Mr. Day, there are 11 starters, two subs and a manager. So Tottenham had 14 people associated with the team that day, shall we say. I'm going to set you a par of six. So one every 10 seconds. Six Tottenham players that day and manager. Your 60 seconds starts as soon as I've typed it into Google now.
Paul Gascoigne.
Gascoigne, yes.
Paul Gascoigne will be cropping up shortly, along with Steve Sedgley. He must have played.
Gazza Sedgley, yes.
Yeah, because I had a bit of an in there. Ex-Gillingham manager, Justin Edinburgh.
Yes.
Was Torsvet the keeper?
He was.
Okay. So I'll get Lineker was playing.
He was. You're on five already.
Paul Stewart was playing because he scored.
Yes, good job.
I don't know who scored. Oh, the other was Des Walker own goal was the other goal.
It was a Des Walker own goal.
So I can't think of the other goal scorer.
Oh, you're already on six. You've got 25 seconds to get one more.
So Justin Edinburgh's one fullback. The other fullback. Dean Austin? Was he the other fullback?
No.
Pat Van Den Hau?
It was Pat Van Den Hau. You've won. But a few more, 10 seconds left. How about the manager? Easy one for you.
George Graham. No, George Graham. Sorry, David Pleat. Was he the manager?
No.
There? Oh, who's managing it? Venables.
Yes,
and Paul Walsh.
On the buzzer. I'm not giving you Paul Walsh. It doesn't really matter.
Well, anyway, I don't care.
In fact, Paul Walsh was a sub. There we go. So you would have got that. So Torsvet, Edinburgh, Van Den Hau as fullbacks. In defence, we had Gary Mabbutt with Steve Sedgley, centre back. Sorry.
Yeah.
They played 4-5-1, so three central midfielders, David Howells, tough one, Paul Stewart and Gazza, of course. Samways and Paul Allen on the flanks, Gary Lineker, lone striker, and Paul Walsh came on for Vinny Samways. Naeem came on for Paul Gascoigne after 17 minutes.
Was it that early, the Gascoigne injury?
Yes, it was.
Although, to be fair, if he came on after 17 minutes, the actual incident was probably after about 6 minutes, wasn't it?
yeah, it was a long time, wasn't it?
Yeah. I didn't realise Naeem was there that early, but okay. Excellent. I'm happy with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like you're in my wheelhouse there with sort of naming early 90s.
Too. Yes, indeed.
Yeah,
little bonus one. How about very quickly? Can you reel off five Nottingham Forest players? You've already got one, Des Walker.
Des Walker.
Players or manager?
After played.
Nigel Clough
and his dad.
And his dad managed three.
Steve Stone.
No, oh no, way before.
In Wone,
well done, yes.
Sheringham?
Nope.
Is it a bit early for Roy Keane?
No, Roy Keane was there. I'm surprised you didn't think you didn't get Mr. Nottingham Forest himself.
Who's Mr. Nottingham Forest? Oh, Stuart Pearce.
Yes.
He scored, didn't he? He scored a cracking free kick, I think.
He did indeed, yes. And the goalkeeper that day, who is Mark the Crossley? Only goalkeeper. He was, yeah, the only man I know to have scored, the only goalkeeper in my lifetime I can remember scoring whilst playing for Wednesday. Came up for a corner in injury time, got an equaliser. There we go.
If any Gillingham fans are listening to this and can correct me, but I'm pretty sure I can't think of a Gillingham goalkeeper that's ever scored in a, ignoring a penalty shootout, but from open play, I've never seen it.
Oh, if it's penalty shootout, Sheffield Wednesday, I still say Kevin Pressman's penalty against Wolves was the single greatest penalty ever taken.
Well, he kicked, didn't he, basically?
Yeah, he just ran up, took a goal kick that just happened to go like the exact top corner, as in like not an inch, like, so, you know, half an inch higher up or to the left would have hit the woodwork perfectly in the top corner, literally as hard as you could possibly kick a ball. And it was, I mean, yeah, like, as in like if you told the keeper where it was going to go, he still would have had absolutely no hope. But there we go.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Day, let's hear fact number two, shall we?
Number two, we'll move on. As we've mentioned, two of the people involved in this, we'll move on to this one, which is Paul Gascoigne once bought an ostrich to training at Spurs.
Beautiful. Why?
Because fellow Spurs player Steve Sedgley had a long neck.
I said why, because it's Paul Gascoigne. What a stupid question. Yeah.
Why is it really?
Go on. So Steve Sedgley had a long neck. Ostriches have long necks.
So Gazza thought, on his way to training, he'd stop by at the local zoo. This was 1990 when Gazza was like one of the most famous people in the country. So obviously the zookeeper was like, yeah, go for it, Paul. Whacked an ostrich in a sack, then pitched up at training and unleashed it on the training ground just for like to have a bit of a laugh at Sedgley and his long neck.
Wow. You'd like to think that a zoo worker got fired pretty soon after.
I don't know. It was probably good publicity for them around then, I reckon. But I love the fact that, so clearly, you've played for sport. We've played for sports teams, worked in offices, been to school. And if someone's got sort of a noteworthy personal feature, like a big nose or ginger hair or they're fat or whatever, that would be like back in the 90s, that was fair game for a bit of banter, wasn't it? So I could get, like, essentially would get a bit of stick for his long neck, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anyone else in the country that would take that to the extreme. I think he'd, let's get an ostrich here.
Yes.
That is taking it to the absolute extreme.
Well, Gazza did like to take things to extremes. I know so many stories. I think back to the one about Lazio where he learned a bit of Italian just enough to, when he was introduced to the president, to shake his hand and say, your daughter has nice tits in Italian. That was his that's his contribution to the Italian language.
Well, he did try and teach them a bit of English during Italia 90. Which unfortunately means I'm going to have to sort of mark this up as explicit content when we
will you really?
Well, I'll tell you the story first. Then you'll see that I probably will.
Go on.
So during Italia 90, the host broadcast channel in Italy wanted the players to do, when they're introduced on the TV screen, a bit like they did in the Premier League for a few years, it'd be like the player walking up to the camera and like his kit and whatever. You know, they did that in the Premier League, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Gazza's one, he did it. So he strutted up to the camera and then just mouthed fucking wanker. And the Italian classic TV network didn't pick up on this. So every time England played, the players were like, it's Lineker, number eight, and he's walking up to the camera, mouthing fucking wanker. Every England game.
Wow.
And that got broadcast on Italian national TV throughout the World Cup.
Not his first rodeo, or maybe that was. Because I remember when they played Norway a little bit later. Norway at some point around that era, when the Norwegian presenter. Oh, have you got any message for the country of Norway? To which he just replied, "Fuck off, Norway." Classic Gazza.
Definitely explicit content. Well, okay. any other favourite Gascoigne anecdotes?
Too many, and definitely will be explicit content if I go through some of my favourite ones, like Les Ferdinand at Euro 96, which I don't think we're going to do. Simon, any of yours?
But yes, please look it up. Les Ferdinand at Euro 96 is a good anecdote. I discovered recently that I think this was while he was at Spurs as well. And as far as I can make out, this was purely for the purposes of a prank. He bought a motorhome, took it to training, and then asked one of his aides, like a Jimmy Five Bellies type character, but not Jimmy Five Bellies. He said to him, "Oh, I bought this new motorhome. This ain't wrong with it. There's a funny noise coming from the roof. Can you go up and have a look?" So I got a ladder, went onto the roof of the motorhome to have a look. At which point, Gascoigne got in the motorhome and drove off. Went down the M1 with this poor bloke on the roof.
Wow.
So what we're seeing here is, from the ostrich anecdote and this, he sort of, when he gets an idea in his head, no matter what it costs and what it requires, he's going to do it, isn't he? Fair play.
He's very lucky, to be fair, that he's never been to prison, if memory serves.
I don't think so.
I'm sure he spent a night. In police custody here and there. But,
when he was at Newcastle, when he first joined Newcastle, he'd have been a teenager, presumably, at this point. Peter Jackson was his manager. Not the bloke who did Lord of the Rings and King Kong. Peter Jackson was the manager, and I don't know if they didn't get on or whatever, it was just Gascoigne being Gascoigne. He stuck rotten fish to the underside of his car seats.
Classic.
And Peter Jackson did not... obviously, his car absolutely reeked. He didn't realise for weeks what was causing this.
Wow.
He was just driving around in a car with rotten fish strapped to it.
And if we can move away from the anecdotes just for a second to say, you know, if
he
you
played
ever
football
hear,
as well, yeah,
he did as well, indeed. And Alex Ferguson talking about how with Gazza, that's come up the biggest non-signing that he regrets, not Shearer, but it's the Gascoigne one. And that's, I think that changed the way he signed players after that, because I don't know if you know that story, but yeah, Gazza was at Newcastle. Ferguson and him shook hands on it. The deal was all sorted. Ferguson's like, "I'm going on holiday for a week. We'll sign when I get back." Ferguson went off on holiday, came back and found out Tottenham had offered his parents a house, which, you know, back then, obviously nowadays, it's like, is it what, per week? Or no, it's just,
just a house, not a street.
Back then, a house was a big thing. And Tottenham offered the parents a house, as well as, I think, matching Man U's contract. And then that was it. You know, they'd lost out on him. And that's why, you know, I remember when Cantona went a bit wild, when obviously Ferguson just got on the next flight out and went over there and just like, you know, got him back into the fold kind of thing. You know, he realised after the Gazza thing that, no, you don't go on holiday and leave these things. But there we go.
It's an interesting point. If Gascoigne had gone to Man U, do you think his career would have gone very differently in terms of would being under Ferguson have made him more disciplined?
Or the opposite.
Was he untameable? Was he like, whoever managed him, he still was essentially Gascoigne. He still was a man who ties fish to a car.
Right. Yeah, you do wonder, because I think he did so well with Terry Venables, because Venables just kind of like was just, you know, roll his eyes, "Oh, that's Gazza," kind of, you know, like came from that school of man management, if you like. If Ferguson had been there, like, you know, ripping him a new one every time he did something wrong, or, you know, who knows, it could have gone one of two ways, right? I mean, it could have but we'll never know.
He's somebody who just in modern football, which is rubbish, wouldn't be tolerated, would he?
No, definitely not.
There's no sort of people sort of say, "Oh, someone like Jack Grealish, he's like the new Gascoigne," but it's a load of rubbish, isn't it? Because it's like, well, I can dribble a bit, but personality wise, there's no comparable, is there, to Gascoigne?
No, no, it's just true.
I can't even think of a...
Oh, George Best, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, but in modern day. Yeah, back in the 70s, to a penny like Rodney Marsh.
Yeah, it? This is true.
But now, I can't even think of a crap comparison. It's just not...
And you're probably not going to get that because it's now so professional in that, well, you're not going to get away with being an alcoholic. Well, having said that, I think quite a few players still smoke, don't they? Every now and then you'll hear about that. So they're
it's almost like a complete taboo, I think, in football, isn't it? It's like, yeah, you're right, people do smoke, but you never see it mentioned ever, do you?
No.
But yeah, you're right. You are right. Footballers do smoke.
And occasionally penetrate their brothers' wives.
Yes, which would, I don't know, if Gascoigne had signed for Man U, maybe that would have played out differently.
Well, that reminds me of one Carlton Palmer story talking about going on England duty, seen by the host.
That's a natural sort of progression from Gascoigne, isn't it, Carlton Palmer?
Well, yeah, and also wives, because Carlton Palmer is sitting by the pool having a beer, as you do on England duty, because, you know, back in the 90s, like, you're preparing to play for your country, right? Just get a few beers in by the swimming pool, goes up and Gazza's on the phone, sweet-talking this lady, just, like, talking to her, yeah, tell me what you're wearing and all this. And Carlton Palmer just, like, gives him the eye, like, as in, like, you know, do you want me to get out of here? You know, Gazza, like, sends him off, so he goes downstairs, gets another pint in, finishes that, goes back up, and Gaz is still on the phone, but it sounds like he's like finishing off, and Carlton looks at him again, goes like, do you want me out of here? Gaz is, just hands the phone over, like, Carlton, it's your wife. And that was from Carlton Palmer, that story, I think, either in the newspaper. Oh, yeah, let's do. I heard that one from Carlton Palmer. So
brilliant.
There we go. Classic Gazza. Right, let's move on. That was fact number two. Right, today's bizarre fan. Yeah, Tottenham, bizarre fans. I mean, you know, this one, fairly bizarre. We've got Jason Biggs, who you probably know as the guy from... The loser from the American Pie movies.
Yes, and absolutely nothing else.
Jim Levenstein, that's the name. I mean, I recognise him. Orange is the New Black, and I've definitely seen him in things, but not. Yeah, I couldn't tell you anything else. But there we go.
The American Pie is like a good example of diminishing returns from a series, I think.
Yes.
The first one at the time, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't stand the test of time at all. But the first one was very popular, and good for a laugh. The second one was watchable, wasn't it? From memory, the third one was absolute dross.
Yes, it went terrible.
And then they churned out a load of like straight TV movies. There's about 8 American Pie movies, I think.
Yes, yeah. Although I did enjoy, they did a reunion one, which I only watched for the first time a year or two ago. I thought that it did okay. I think they left it a few years and then revisited it and got better. But interestingly, because older Jim Levenstein, aka Jason Biggs, when I first heard this, I thought, oh, okay, right, it'll be because he's maybe it's the old Jewish link. Because for those of you who don't know, Tottenham have a lot of Jewish fans. Is that correct? Is that, I mean, what is the link? Is it just the fact they're from North London, which is a...
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest, whether it is that true, that they've got a high Jewish fan population? I know it's been sort of in the news fairly recently, hasn't it, about they're trying to stop certain chants and whatever, which I think, rightly so, people are offended by it. I mean, I can't imagine the people chanting it are getting any joy out of it. So if people are offended, no, by it, doing it. But I don't know if there's any truth in the fact that they have a high proportion of Jewish fans.
I mean, I went out with a Jewish girl about 20 years ago, and I remember asking her what team her and her family supported. I mean, she just looked at me as if I was stupid. Well, obviously Tottenham is like, okay, yeah, no, okay, right. So I mean, yes, I'm going to, based on that one interaction, I'm going to go with, yes, it is true. But yeah, I thought this, and apparently, as per Wiki, old Jason Biggs often gets cast as Jewish characters. Maybe he just has this Jewish look about him, but he isn't at all. He's actually grew up Catholic and is of Sicilian descent. So there we go.
Why does he support Tottenham?
Why does he support Tottenham? Absolutely no idea. He's been on Soccer AM talking about supporting Tottenham, tweeted a couple of times about them. So, you know, I mean, he's maybe not hardcore, but he's not one of those who just wore a shirt once. It has been over a few years. He has kind of declared his love of Tottenham.
That's good enough for me. I mean, yes. I'll be honest, Biggs, he's no Kim Jong-un, is he? And he's
Kim Jong-un, Osama bin Laden, even John Ketley. Ian Kelly, sorry.
He's no Mylene Klass.
No. But, you know, still pretty bizarre. You know, I think, you know, the guy from American Pie supports Spurs. But there we go. To be fair, reason. Pretty good. The American Pie character is pretty Spursy, isn't he? So, I mean, it's... I think it works.
Other people that were in America... Obviously, Eugene Levy's the one everyone knows from American Pie, isn't he?
Yes.
Was the other bloke called Sean William Scott? He was the other bloke from
America. Yeah, that was Stifler, wasn't it? Yes. Yeah.
Tara Reid.
To be fair, lots of them... I was going to say, lots of them went on to big things. Orange is the New Black also had the... Who was the kind of like more mature ginger lady, curly hair?
Oh, Alison Hannigan, because she was in Buffy, wasn't she?
Oh, was she? Okay.
Yeah, because I think she was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and yeah, she's been in a few things. Yeah, she was. She could actually act a bit, I think. Her and Eugene Levy were like the two people in it who could like act a bit. Well, I have to admit, Eugene Levy, I just assumed was some like. Sort of very broad comedy, a bit rubbish, sort of almost like a Chevy Chase type sort of character. But then I watched Schitt's Creek. Have you watched Schitt's Creek?
I have not.
Schitt's Creek is fantastic. And it's Eugene Levy, weirdly, his son. Eugene Levy's son's in it and his daughter's in it as well. It's like a small town American comedy. It sounds a bit rubbish, but it's brilliant. And it's just beautifully written and beautifully acted. And he's really good. So yeah, that's my top tip.
Okay.
It's not a good top. Loads of Golden Globe awards and everything. So it's not like I'm not pulling one out of the bag there at all.
You're not predicting Leicester to win the Premier League. No. 2015 or whatever.
But the most popular sitcom in the world. I think you should give it a go.
Okay. Right. Well, Mr. Day, let's have our final fact to decide whether Tottenham are more interesting than Man U.
The final fact is Chris Waddle and Glenn Hoddle are the only ever footballing duo to have a UK chart hit.
Wow. Which is surprising.
Yes, massively. I mean, clearly, everyone knows Hoddle and Waddle, Diamond Lights, got to number 12 in the charts in the mid-80s. But the fact they're the only duo ever, it really surprised me. Surely there must have been other players that gave it a bash. Beautiful. But there's only ever been, I think, 5 or 6 footballers have released a single.
Right. Yeah, that is surprising. Do you think... Who else has been there?
Keegan released Head Over Heels in Love.
Okay. I never would have guessed that.
It got to number 31 and it is abysmal. But it is possibly the best song on this list. So the last footballer to release a single is Andy Cole, who released a song called Outstanding in 1999, and it's badly titled.
What genre? That's what I'm trying to ask. What genre is it?
He does a bit of rap in it.
Okay.
Notice I say he does a bit of rap in it rather than me saying the genre is rap.
Okay.
It's atrocious. It's one of those where his rap involves rhyming the same word with itself.
Oh, that old classic.
About 3 times. Ian Wright has released a single a couple of years before.
I can believe that. I can see that. I can see Ian Wright doing that back in the day. Yeah.
Well, I think that was around the time they tried to turn Ian Wright into like a big TV personality, non-football, didn't they?
Right.
They gave him his own chat show. At some point.
That's right, yeah.
He presented the reboot of Gladiators. but yeah, they tried to turn him into like a viable sort of TV personality. Now he's like, he does football punditry and he's perfectly good at it. But yeah, they tried to turn him into a breakout star, didn't they? And it didn't work.
No, it didn't.
But we haven't landed on, although we've got mentioned earlier, the only ever footballer to have a top 10 single.
Go on.
Is Paul Gascoigne.
Wow. What? Ah, what?
Fog on the Tyne.
That's the one with Linda's Farm.
Yes, it got to number two.
Wow. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had that on vinyl, you know, because obviously like vinyl's cool and that. Where do you stand on the whole people going on about, I think things sound better on vinyl?
I don't care whether that's true or not, right? It might be. I can see where they're coming from. I just think the people who bang on about it are really wanky and annoying. Do you know what I mean? It's like, all right, and yeah, it's fine. Yeah, go for it.
Just get on with your lives, right?
Go and listen to it then. So were you on the decks mixing a bit on the time? Gazza did have a follow up hit that got to number 31 called Geordie Boys brackets Gazza Rap.
You know what? I feel like I may have that rings a bell. That definitely rings a bell. I do remember Chris Waddle being interviewed about Diamond Light saying it was a real shame that the second single they had lined up he thought was much better. He thought it was much better than Diamond Lights, but I don't know what, for whatever reason, I don't know if one of them moved abroad or they got dropped by the record company in inverted commas.
Diamond Lights is awful. I don't know if you've heard it. It is terrible.
Yes.
It's not remote. There's nothing catchy about it or
no.
It's just a drab song, isn't it?
Especially in the era of, you know, manufacture. I say the era. I mean, it's been there for a long time, but the ease with which music can be manufactured. You know, it's, you know, you look at, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, for example, has got his fingers in many pies. Like, you know, he'll, buddy up with a sock company and just advertise the socks on Instagram and they sell like millions.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, given that, you know, the age of social media, we haven't had a Cristiano Ronaldo or any footballer. Well,
and there's got to be. I know people go on about like, and rightly so, surely a footballer's got to come out as gay soon. There must be some gay footballers in the Premier League. Absolutely, yeah. There must be. There must be some good singers in the Premier League.
Right.
There's got to be, hasn't there? Just think the and amount of footballers in the Football League. There must be three or four who are like, shit hot singers.
But you don't even need to be. You just need a desire to get, you know, to release a song. I'm guaranteed pretty much any of the I don't know, Man City or Man U players could decide to release a song and it would do pretty well regardless of quality.
That's a fair point. I was being a bit naive there. I was expecting like Declan Rice to turn up on X Factor or something.
There we go.
Gotta be. That's like... But my favourite fact about Hoddle and Waddle is that the song wasn't released as Hoddle and Waddle.
Go on.
It was released as Diamond Lights by Glenn and Chris.
Oh, that's not the most inspiring name, is it?
But also, if you're someone who's like not into football at all, like, are you going to buy a single by Glenn and Chris? It's like the local snooker team, isn't it, or something?
Dave and Steve, I think, probably the only combo that's just as
So I don't think that did him any favours. Whereas I feel like Hoddle and Waddle was like a known commodity, wasn't it? Because they were like both in the England team, both played for Spurs, both went abroad. They must have dovetailed pretty well on the pitch, I think, given their positions. So then, well, surely that's a known commodity you go with, not Glenn and Chris. Come on, lads.
Those were innocent times. Our marketing knowledge was not at the same level.
No. So now it is now, 23 years since a footballer released a single. I feel like that needs to change.
I feel like it should and it will do after this podcast. So, Mr. Day, are Tottenham Hotspur the most interesting team in the Premier League?
Oh, no.
No. Why?
But they're pretty good. They're a bit Spursy. They're probably about fifth or sixth in this.
Yeah, it's a good effort. They're kind of every now and then you thought they threatened to break in, but no, never really did. Jason Biggs versus Kim Jong Un or Osama bin Laden, never going to get there.
I'd like to see Kim Jong Un play a virgin in an American comedy.
No, this is. I genuinely would like
Actually,
to see.
I would,
that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see American Pie remake with Kim Jong Un.
Straight down the multiplex for that. Yeah, absolutely. I'd pay the. Do you know what? talking. Do you know what it costs? Because I my daughter who is six, I took her to the cinema recently. It's the first time I've been to the cinema since pre-COVID, and we watched Sing 2, and it's quite a good fan. When did it come out? You can get it on the Sky Store now. To hire it for 2 days costs £17.
On Sky?
Yeah. That's not buying it. That's for 2 days. It's £17.
Wow.
And I'm sure it's not just Sing 2. I know Bono's in Sing 2. Bono takes over Sing 2. It's ridiculous. But I assume like the new Bond film is probably similar. But yeah, that's what it costs to hire a film.
This is what I like about not caring or knowing anything about pop culture, in that there's already so many options. If I want to watch something, it's great, you know, like Top Gear season 4 or something like that, you know. I don't know what the latest season is or anything, and I don't really care. I'll just like, but there we go. Okay, well, Tottenham have failed once again, Mr. Day. Thank you very much for that. Next week it will be, we're on to the W's, right?
And the first W is Watford.
Is Watford, and that's going to be the best quiz of the whole 20-team series. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Has it got anything to do with football?
Yes, definitely, definitely references Watford, which you'll be pleased to hear.
Not necessarily. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Day, thank you very much. Everybody else, join us next week for Watford. Bye-bye.